Thanks for listening to your Triple M Show podcast. This is a special Triple M's No Talk Day podcast. Your regular Triple M Show will be back soon. Meantime, make sure you follow it on socials and the listener app for all the latest. Triple M's No Talk Day is Monday, July 1, a day where we take all our shows, news, traffic reports and commercials off the air and highlight the importance for men to prioritise their mental well-being. That's why you're receiving this podcast today, the second in a series of three, where Triple M's Sean Goff, who spearheads the No Talk Day initiative on behalf of the Triple M network, sat with Lifeline's Sayed, who shares his mental health story, along with insights and advice for taking control and care of for your mental health.
I guess my first question is just about, I guess, sort of how you sort of started to embark on a journey of starting to look after your mental health.
It was an accident. I started by accident. My whole life, I never felt like I could open up to someone. Anytime I tried, I quickly found out that it was a bad idea. Either they got really emotional or upset, or it just... So it wasn't until totally randomly one day I was talking to someone and she made me realize that I could talk to her. She wasn't upset. She wasn't trying to jump all over what I was saying or get really reactive to it. And she was curious and she was just open. And she just really opened a door that I didn't realize was there. And honestly, I wish that I had known that that was possible before that. I didn't even know it was, which is weird because now it's my whole life, you know, to like how far I've come. But back, you know, that was not that long ago that, yeah, you couldn't have even given me a set of instructions to follow. Wouldn't have known how to read it.
What did this person do that really made a difference for you?
She just listened. Like, it's really hard to put into words how profound it is. It doesn't sound like much to say that. She just listened. But I had a story that when I opened up as a kid, adults would start crying. And then I'd have to manage their tears and figure out, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, so I learned to stop opening up because, you know, I didn't know what to do with that. But she didn't. She was just like, she was just curious. Mm. She was like, oh, okay. And then I'd say something else and she'd just sit there with that and not jump all over it or not make it a big deal or a song and dance or anything. It was just, she would just accept it. I'd give her something else and she accepted it. And it just kept going like that until eventually I was crying. And I hadn't cried at that point for, I don't know, since I was a kid, you know. I was a young man at that point and I didn't even know I could cry. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And what sort of stuff was going on for you around that time? What were the things that you were talking about and sort of not offloading, but sort of, you know, in your words, giving to her?
Just I had a lot of pain. I had a lot of pain that I didn't know how to express before that. And maybe it's that I didn't know how to express it. Maybe it's also that I didn't feel like I had someone who could listen to it.
Yep.
But it was just, I'd been living in so much pain for so long. It was just normal, you know, to just be walking around feeling slimy and disgusting and like no one would ever be able to, like I'd never be able to make a real connection with someone.
Yep.
It was like self-disgust and I had heaps of, you know, drug problems back then and yeah, heaps of stuff.
I'm aware that you and I have just met and this is incredibly intimate and I just want to say that I'm incredibly grateful for your honesty today and you hold you got the steering wheel here today in terms of how much you're prepared to share and I'll respect that.
Thanks, Sean.
Do you feel like you can sort of talk about the things that motivated those feelings in you? I guess, I think sometimes the more specific I guess we can be, the more it can probably help somebody latch on to that.
I had problems with sobriety, basically.
Right.
Any way I could, I would just destroy it. I was taking antibiotics just to bend my, because it just made me feel different. You know, I was anything that I could get my hands on, antibiotics, cough syrup, alcohol, lots of, you know, illegal things. And I spent my life in that, in any state other than being present with how I felt.
And this was as a way of you managing that pain?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yep.
I'd tried stuff. I'd tried being a, you know, I tried studying. I tried having a job. I tried studying multiple things. I tried lots of different stuff. And all I could do was manage to, yeah, exactly, take things, take something. That was the only thing that really stuck. That was the only thing that was consistent at that point in my life.
And some of this pain, was that sort of, did that sort of come from other people onto you?
Yeah, I would say there was a lot of troubles in my family, troubles with emotion regulation, troubles with gambling, raised voices, all these kinds of things. I grew up with lots of that kind of thing. And I definitely picked up a lot from other people. Like now I have language for it and I have words for it to say that, okay, I was an empath. I'm an empath and it means that I'm pretty sensitive. But growing up, I didn't know that. I just felt basically like something was wrong with me because everyone else seemed to have themselves together somewhat and I was obviously struggling more than them. So I just figured, you know, it seemed like something was wrong with me.
Sometimes we can not really know what's really going on with somebody and they can appear to be okay and together and, God, I have days like that. I'm probably having a day like it today, to be honest, but yeah. Somehow just manage it.
Yeah, it's tough because there's plenty of conditions or demands from life where we do have to manage it. We do have to put a professional face on or we do have to, you know, we can't just let the kids know that we're struggling to pay the bills, you yep. know, or else then what? You know, like if the captain of the ship is, you know, panicking and freaking out, then that's all of us basically scrambling, right? So it is. It's tough to find the balance of like who can you open up to then and how do you, where do you? I mean, I grew up and it just wasn't a done, like no one did that. No one.
Yep.
I saw my dad never open up to anyone.
Is that still the case now?
No, he's done a lot better actually since he did see a therapist for a while. And actually, I remember seeing one day my partner told me about, she's like, oh, you know, your dad. And then she proceeded to tell me all these feelings that he has. He feels like this and he feels like that and he feels like this. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, that's, you're just making this up. Like, what are you, you know, that's just all rubbish. And no, it turns out that the day that they met, literally the one day that they met, he told her this all this stuff that he'd never told me before. And that was just very eye-opening for me to see like, okay, so it's just because I've never seen it doesn't mean it's not there. You know, probably especially in the people who I think I'm, who I'm most certain about.
Yep.
You know, the ones who I'm most, there's probably a lot more than what I recognize.
What steps did you take to sort of start to get yourself some help?
The thing that really helped me more than anything was journaling.
Yep.
Because the biggest block for help was actually knowing what to say. And it's kind of like, how do you even, you know, I've got this Niagara Falls, but I can only speak at, if I just, it's this little tiny valve that I can open while I speak, but I've got this raging amount of stuff to talk about behind it. So how do you even pick what comes out? And just that alone, I couldn't even get over that. I couldn't even get through that for a really long time. And journaling and writing was a way to just get the thoughts out without having to deal with someone else there and without having to figure out all of that mess in my head of trying to think about how they're receiving it and all that kind of stuff. And then from journaling, that is what I got a lot better at, being able to actually reach out. And, you know, I've called a few times different helplines for different things. And I guess it was spending the time and trying to give it the time to just sit there with the words and figure it out.
So with calling helplines, what were the things that you found helpful when you would call various helplines? Were there any things that sort of stood out that worked for you or that something someone did that made a difference?
Yeah, it really was just people who know how to listen well. That means that they ask the right questions. They're asking questions where it shows that they're really interested in my actual experience instead of sometimes when we listen, we're really listening for how we can jump in or how we can help. You know, it's like we're trying to listen for the moment when we can rescue them or be a hero or something. And it's when people really can let go of that and just truly listen. Those are the ones that I found really helpful. I think another thing that really set me up well for reaching out to Lifeline and other helplines is that I got told something a long time ago while I was like learning about mental health and stuff. Someone said that it's kind of like dating, and getting a therapist is kind of like dating. You sort of have to play the field a little bit and you sort of have to try your luck a few times. And that really landed for me because I was like, oh, I don't really know if it's, you know, I had counselors in high school and in middle school. It was awful. Like, it's really not for me, that kind of thing. That's sort of how I thought back in the day. But when someone said that, I was like, oh my God, that makes sense. That makes sense. It's like you want to try a few different times and accept the fact that you're probably not going to get along with everyone. You're probably not going to have a good connection with everyone. So it might take a couple of tries to get someone that you can really vibe with.
I understand that. I've experienced that. I agree with that completely. You don't always get it right. You don't gel with every single therapist, and sometimes it can feel like this is not achieving anything. Just want to go back to your journaling for a bit if I can. So that for you would be, so what, you would just write things that came into your head or things that were troubling you? What was it? What did your journaling consist of?
The thing about the journaling for me was that it was actually similar to the whole opening up thing. I didn't know what to say, and I didn't know, it's just exactly the same with journaling. It was like I didn't know what to write as well when I first started. But someone said, it's not about what you write, it's about that you write. Just sit down, force it out. Doesn't matter what it is, just get it out. And there were literally some journal entries that were like, I don't know what to write about, this feels dumb. You know, it was just like literally that's all that could come out basically to start with. But eventually it started flowing, and I guess it's kind of like you're stirring it up. It's like you're sort of moving stuff around. And that can be scary because sometimes that's the last thing you want to do is to stir it up. But I think the trick is it's up to you to decide. If there's something that you don't want to write about, don't. Just like that, just don't. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, find the things that you can, find the step that you can take, find the thing that you can put a word to. Yeah.
Go from there.
Yeah, exactly.
So was there a crucial moment for you where you thought you got to a point, because getting help can be admitting you've got a problem, even though you know it's there, but admitting that you need help and then, because it's like multi-stage, isn't it, really? You've got to sort of come to a realization because you already know you've got a problem because you feel the way you feel. And then sort of starting to take a step down that path to getting that kind of help. Was there a realization where getting help for you was just, that was the only option? Was that how it played out for you?
It's actually kind of embarrassing to admit how many times it still happens, I'll be honest. It's like even recently I was just, maybe within the last year, my partner, the person that I've been with for now, maybe 4 years, she has been trying to tell me since we first started. She's like, you know, that's some stuff right there. You got some stuff to work out. And I just haven't received that message until this year, finally. And I was like really surprised that she was right. And it's like, man, how many times do I have to learn this lesson? I guess as many as it's going to take. But that's what it was for me. It was the fact that it was impacting other people. That's what it's always come down to, is like I tend to be kind of just fine. I'm like, you know, I'm fine. I can live with this. I'm fine. I can live with like basically, you know, being addicted to whatever and just going around figuring it out and self-medicating or whatever. But it was when it started hurting other people, it was when I started noticing that it was hurting other people. That's when I was like, wait a second, hold up. What's happening here? You know, I need to pay attention. This is a pattern. And then fast forward, same thing. It's like I didn't realize that I was so full of suggestions and full of ideas and full of solutions and was actually a terrible listener to the people who I was closest to. And then, which is so ironic because I literally teach people how to do it in one setting and then I go home and I'm breaking every cardinal rule. So yeah, even most recently, I hired a coach. I hired a listening coach, which is like hilarious. But in my professional world, it just, you know, when I'm talking in management and corporate and this other environment, it's so easy to forget everything that I know.
I love that. I didn't know a listening coach existed.
Yeah. It's definitely a thing. Very, very helpful.
But that just really, doesn't that just show that mental health is a daily thing? It's ongoing. There's no end point to us looking after our mental health.
Absolutely. It really is. It's just like our physical health. There's no point where we stop, where it stops being important. And if it does, if there's a point where it stops being important, then the dangerous thing in how I can see it is that health can be not a priority until you regret that it's not a priority. And by that point, it's probably too late. You know, it's like, oh, now I need surgery. Whereas it could have been a thing that was, if it was a priority, it might have been a whole different journey. It might have been a whole different outcome. But it's so quiet that it's easy to ignore. It's easy to ignore the little pain in my back. It's like, oh, you know, whatever, I'll just keep going.
Mm.
You know, a little annoying thing in my relationship that keeps popping up, like some divorce pattern or some whatever pattern of, you know, kids yelling at me or whatever it is. It's like, oh, whatever, I'll just keep going. Until it's kind of too bad, you know, it gets really bad enough. And it's like, man, someone said to me, this is what my partner said to me recently. She said that experience is learning from your mistakes, but wisdom is learning from other people's mistakes.
Mm.
Man, that just hit me. It's like, imagine if I could learn from other people's mistakes. Like, yeah.
So you talked about journaling. Are there other things that you do, say, Ed, on a daily basis or regularly to look after your mental well-being?
Yeah, heaps. I do so many things now. I think the stuff now that I do would have terrified me a few years ago. It's like you kind of build up a habit or you build up a system or something. You build up what works.
What are they?
Stuff like I keep my time really locked down. So I track my time. I look at it. I really like data. I'm always paying attention to where I'm spending my time. I've got some habits that I always fall into if I'm overwhelmed and I don't notice it until it's too late. So stuff like doom scrolling on my phone, mm-hmm. you know, just stuff like, not that big of a deal, but it leads me into bad places where I just don't want to go. And it's happened enough times that, so now I'm really conscious about how I use my phone, how I use my time. I track it. So lots of things like that. I touch base with people quite regularly. I've got a group of friends who, those are the people who I know I can go to when I'm struggling. I know that I can open up when I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we just check in, you know, just for no reason other than, yeah.
How do you do that? Is that via, like, do you text, do you call? Is it a WhatsApp group? How do you do it?
Yeah, all the above. We use Telegram. I like sending voicemails. Voicemails is really a good way to just, yeah, sometimes it'll just be a life update. It'll just be like, hey, this is what's going on. You know, like I'll probably send one about this. I'm like, oh my God, I got Triple M, everyone. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, just all sorts of stuff. And also checking in with people about, like, I think a lot of people have this misconception around success where it's like you look at successful people who have lots of things going for them and maybe they're celebrating, you know, they just bought a house or something like that. Big celebration, or just had a baby. And many people get confused by how painful those events can be. It's like, yeah, you just bought a house and now there's a massive amount of remorse that you get struck with, massive amount of fear that you might get hit by, or just had a baby, now you're exhausted and you haven't been able to sleep for weeks, and maybe your relationships, now you're fighting all the time because you're stressed about money or whatever. And so a lot of people don't recognize that. It's like, just because lots of good stuff is happening doesn't mean that people won't appreciate a chance to really open up and have someone who's open to listening, not just to the good stuff, but also to whatever else is going on. So, yeah, checking in with people around stuff like that, like, hey, how's that thing? You know, you got that promotion, that was a really big deal. What's it been like? How you doing?
I love that, because our theme this year is check in on yourself, check on a mate. So really talking to those two different groups of people, and it's because we can move between those two groups. Sometimes we're the person that's struggling with our mental well-being, and then sometimes we're worried about somebody who might be struggling with their mental well-being. And I don't know, maybe it's possible to be in both those groups at the same time sometimes.
Absolutely.
So I like that message from you. I think that message makes lots of sense, that just because you feel like, and it goes back to you really don't know what's going on for somebody, despite what might they might be putting on social media or how they, you know, the things you might be seeing or that they might be telling you, that doesn't, often doesn't tell the whole story, does it?
I would say maybe never tells a whole story. Whatever it is that we're giving one another and whatever it is that we're receiving one from one another, there's always more.
Mm.
There's just always more. It's guaranteed. So it's like, and it can be pretty scary to ask, because a lot of people are like, well, what if I make it worse? You know, like I don't want to ask someone how they're doing because I might make it worse. And that's a really normal fear. And I think it's important to really just normalize that it's okay to feel that way. And it's also okay to recognize that you probably can't say the wrong thing. When you've just coming from the right place, you probably can't really. Anything is probably better than nothing.
That makes sense. I love that. So just staying on that point then for a second, Sayed, what is your advice then? So somebody's worried about somebody, they're not quite sure how to go about it. They have that whole, oh, I can't do this kind of thing, but I'm still worried about somebody. Do you have any advice on how the best way or a way for them just to sort of gently start down that path to inquiring about someone they care about's mental health?
For me, I like preparation. That's what would work the best. Prepare. Just prepare. So maybe prepare by pulling out a pen and paper and writing out all the stuff that I want to say and then thinking about it, or asking friends or family, like just trying to open a conversation like, hey, I've got a friend, I'm worried about them, I want to talk to them and I'm just not sure how. What do you reckon? Like what? And just kind of working it out a little bit, or even calling myself, you know, I wouldn't mind, like I've done this before, call a helpline for a conversation that I want to have with someone else. It's like, hey, I don't know how to talk about this. Like, how should I talk about this? This person's losing their memory. You know, that it's really scary. Like they're losing their memory. It's basically like dementia. So how do I want to be sensitive and talk to them in a respectful way. And I have no idea how. So I called a dementia helpline. You know, and then that made it way easier to then actually have a conversation with that other person. So, prepare a bit,
mm-hmm.
So look around, find out other ways to help feel a bit like, just normalize it, recognize that if you have a problem that you want to figure out or solve, someone's solved it. Someone's figured it out. There's some expert out there who has put a great podcast out, or there's some person who's written a great book on it. There's probably someone out there who's really figured out how to say the thing that you want to say in the kind of way that you want to say it. And it's just about finding that.
It's interesting you talk about, you know, rehearsing the conversation or researching the conversation you want to have with a helpline. So it's probably a good chance to talk about Lifeline specifically then here. Is that something that Lifeline can help with?
Yeah, absolutely. Lifeline's there for, especially because if you're trying to help someone, it probably has some different sides to it. Likely, it's having an impact on you somehow. Pretty often, that's the case, and that's pretty normal. On the flip side, the other side is that in terms of actually helping them, Lifeline has a ton of great resources on their website. So does Beyond Blue. Lots of these websites have like really, Griefline is amazing for resources. Like even if someone loses a pet, there's this incredible resource on grieving pets, which is something that you really wouldn't think about until it's you and your family, you know, and your kids are trying to deal with it and like you're trying to, you know. So a lot of these resources are out there. It's really just about kind of recognizing that in terms of mental health, there's actually a whole ocean of stuff. There's so much stuff out there. It's just about figuring out how to get it, how to reach out for it, how to look for it, how to ask for help. It's that taking that first step. So in that way, helplines are amazing because you just get to connect with a person. Like if you called Lifeline, you get to actually talk to a human being and you're just talking to them and saying, hey, here's my situation. And they can kind of help you make sense of it and kind of help just unpack it and listen to what you're going through, and then also point out what is it that might really help? What resources or referrals or services, where could you go next?
I know that mental health isn't linear in terms of, you know, dealing with it. It can sometimes be a bit snakes and laddery. Can I ask what it's been like for you? What are the things you found weren't helpful? I know you've touched on doom scrolling and things like that, but are there any things that sort of were hurdles or obstacles or setbacks sort of with, you know, in the process of you sort of starting to take charge and take care of your own mental health?
Yeah, I think, well, firstly, like I do kind of, there's a part of me that feels like everything that you try has its place, you know? So, for example, when I was getting sober, that included relapse, right? It included plenty of relapse. And I didn't really beat myself up for it. I just tried to find out so what's the underlying thing here? There's something underneath this that I need to do or attend to. And it's sort of the same thing with coping. It's like we sometimes rely on a coping that helps in one way, but it hurts in another way. You know, go to the pokies. It's like, feel better because I don't have to face it. I don't have to deal with it. But then tomorrow I wake up and I'm like, oh, crap. Not again. And the thing is, sometimes we rely on the thing that we can access, and it's the only thing that we can access. And figuring out how to relieve the pressure around that and kind of, I guess, lift the guillotine up a little bit around it is what can help to actually address it properly. It's like, in order to really actually make that next step and talk to the gambling helpline, I kind of have to forgive myself a little bit for being in such a mess that I've gotten myself into, enough that I can handle talking to the helpline. So as far as the stuff that's like not been helpful, I'd say that everything was kind of helpful in its own way. And I just, the only thing for me personally is that it was the stuff that affected other people. Those were the things that really catalyzed, they really got me moving. It was when I could recognize, and that's kind of funny, isn't it? Like oftentimes we'll do that where we're okay to just drag ourselves through broken glass, but as soon as someone else is getting dragged behind us, that's what kind of snaps us out of it. But really, in terms of getting help and what hasn't been helpful, it's talking to the wrong person. So opening up about stuff, it is really important to find someone to open up to. But if you're opening up to someone who's making you feel ashamed or who's making you feel judged or someone who's criticizing you, and by the time you're finished, you're like, man, you feel worse about yourself. That's not the right person to talk about with this stuff. And it's the same thing for like your accounting. It's the same thing for your finances. If you're going to an accountant who is, you know, your financial circumstances are getting worse, and you're going to see a chiropractor and your pain's getting worse, it's the same thing with opening up about your mental health. You really have to observe, is this having the effect that I want it to have? Is this helping? If not, that's okay, but maybe learn, really take, slow down and learn where, what good help even looks like, what good listening really looks like.
Nelly, sort of coming toward the end, but a couple of bits of advice I wanted to ask of you. First one, for somebody who may not be or feels like they're not ready to talk, what advice would you have for them?
Sometimes it might be tough to actually make that phone call and have a conversation or even a text message. It might be tough to start that. What I found when I was in that place really helpful is forums. There's a lot of incredible forums where you can go and see other people's experiences and read about other people who've recovered or who've come through it and overcome it without really having to get involved. You don't have to open up. You don't have to share your own story. And I was big on forums when I was a teenager. It really normalized a lot. I realized, you know, I would be struggling, thinking like, man, something's wrong with me, until I realized, actually, no, something's wrong with all of us. So this is probably, you know, heaps of us going through the same thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that really helps, finding forums, yeah.
Okay, and the second bit of advice is somebody who is struggling, and they are open to getting help and taking steps, what's the first step for them to take, would you advise?
Two things. Firstly, reaching out to someone that they trust. It's got to be someone that they trust, and that means, you know, like someone who treats them well, reaching out to someone that they trust. And if they don't have someone that they trust, reaching out to a service like Lifeline, like Beyond Blue, something like that. And secondly, understanding that when it comes to services, it really is a matter of rolling the dice, and sometimes you've got to roll it a few times, and that's okay. It's all right. You might not get along. Try again. It's no problem.
That's awesome. I really marveled on some of the things that you have done to just listening to your podcast and watching on your podcast, and the TED Talk thing that you did, where you watch one every day, or you spent time with TED Talks every day?
Yeah, I did that for a while in basically the pit of my depression when I was starting to sober up, yeah.
What drove you there?
It was very inspiring. You know, I made sure that during that phase of my life, I made sure that I watched one video randomly, and it was just completely random. Sometimes it would be on topics that I had absolutely zero knowledge or interest in, but it was really inspiring. It was inspiring to see people solving unsolvable problems. You know, I look around and there's a lot of problems, right? There's a lot of hopelessness, especially right now, and how the economy is right now, and with the violence against women all over the place, and lots of different things politically. There's lots of things to be upset about and to be frustrated by and feel disempowered by. But when you look at something like TED or TEDx videos, there's literally an endless reel of incredible work being done and incredible insight. And yeah, it actually did play a big part of my recovery, I think, in the long term. Is all those cool ideas bouncing around in there.
That's awesome. I want to say thanks today for your time. I was really interested in about you being mindful of where you're spending your time, and I hope you feel like today it's been well spent.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Sean.
You know, I'm humbled and I'm grateful for your honesty as well and your openness to share your experience with me for No Talk Day. I'm hugely grateful. So it's wonderful to meet you, and thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Cheers.
If this podcast has brought up emotions that feel hard to manage right now, remember it's perfectly okay to reach out for support. If you find it tough to talk to a mate about what's going on, you can reach out to Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au/talk.